Chico's Mask Podcast, the Mask Cast, from podcast.chicosmask.com.
Are you ready, boys?
Yeah, braced and ready.
Here we go.
Do it.
You just heard some fancy schmancy turntable work by yours truly.
That was good stuff.
Oh, this one's in stereo, by the way.
Yeah.
So you actually get to experience.
Because we are actually in the Shapeless Mask studio.
We're in your head right now.
In beautiful Burbank.
That's right.
Burbank, California.
Real quick, some introductions. First off, this is the Shapeless Mask podcast, or the Mask Cast, as those of us in the industry like to call it.
I don't like to call it Mask Cast, but
anyway, let's introduce each other. So across from me is Sir Mildred Pierce, who is a knight
Order of
in
the
white
Garter.
Satin.
Yeah, I'm not really in the Order of the Garter.
He's a photographer, artiste, plays guitar, and he sings.
Sometimes.
He sings really beautifully, but I swear to God, it's like another person's voice coming out of his throat.
Yes.
If you hear this and you hear his songs, you're going to go, that's not the same guy.
Oh, I've got a master's in astronomy and astrophysics from Cornell University, too. Don't forget that.
Yeah.
And so you are EBA. He likes Coke, like the Letterman. He's a really good turntablist, as you've heard already. Can I mention Graffiti?
No.
He usually goes by the name Satire.
IOF and Seb Screw.
Yeah.
Big up Jack and Bell.
Shout-outs to them.
Mothra and AS1. And
I had something I needed to say.
Okay, yes. You were.
I promised a
friend of ours.
Friend of ours from Australia. Can you guess who I'm talking about?
Rhymes with freeze.
Or freezy.
That would be threezy.
Threezy. Maybe threezy or threeze. I never knew how to pronounce it, but I always assumed it was threezy just because.
We shall fight to the death until we determine.
Yeah. Or we could just ask him.
Oh, okay. Sure.
So, like I said, I always thought it was threezy because the Aussies love to add the little E thing onto the end of words just to make them cute, to foster the international illusion that Australians are unusually cute and cuddly.
It's the romper room island. And one day they'll grow up and use the real English like the real big guys.
The Brits?
Yeah.
So anyway, of course, you know, everybody knows what a Barbie is.
Yeah. Like the doll.
Yeah. Throw another shrimp on
the Barbie
doll. Yeah. Do you know what a mozzie and a blowy and a bitey? You know,
no.
They're all insects. Mozzies are mosquitoes.
Of course.
I tried to actually get people in Alaska to start saying that, but it just wouldn't catch on.
Are there a lot of mosquitoes?
They're infamously
because
large.
I always thought like snow and mosquitoes are kind of incompatible.
Well, snow and large unmoving bodies of water are quite compatible. And in the summer, they come out in force.
Ah.
I think they have the ability to hibernate in the winter.
Or they're mutants. The other possibility is the Alaskan government is flying them in, importing mosquitoes.
I think it has something to do with HARP.
I wish they'd import them from... What's HARP?
The big radio array thing that is, you know, common fodder in conspiracy theories. It is true, though, that the mosquito is the state bird of Alaska. Moving on.
Yes. Let's not dwell on that.
Hosties are flight attendants, posties are mailmen, pollies are politicians, rellies are your relatives.
Rellies.
Yeah.
Rally. Sorry, that was a terrible pun. You can punch me now.
Rally.
Only augmented by your bad accent.
A joey, you know what a joey is, right?
A baby kangaroo.
Baby kangaroo, okay. Yep. A sickie is a sick day.
A sick day.
Okay. Yeah. Like, if you want to take a sick day, I'm going to take a sickie and head down to the the beach.
This is getting really annoying.
The whole E thing?
Yeah. This is,
isn't it?
Australians? Do they do anything? I mean, do they use, like, A's or O's?
They have some other words, but I, you know.
Oh, like, we have sicko, you know? Which, for some reason.
Like Jacko.
Yeah. And Jocko, who's also Australian. Oi, oi, oi!
Jocko?
You remember Jocko?
That
the Australian guy who looked like the like a blonde, like an Aryan Grace Jones, and he's always hoisting a giant Energizer battery into this.
No, I don't know. Is it commercial or something?
Yeah, it's commercial.
I'm thinking of Rocco.
This right.
Rocco's Modern Life or whatever. Mm. He was. You ever seen that?
I know. I'm familiar with that. I'm more educated on that than you are on the mysterious ways of Jocko. That's for sure.
Yeah, thankfully.
Yeah.
Sunnies. You know what sunnies are?
Eggs.
Sunglasses.
Oh, sunglasses.
A lolly.
A lollipop.
It comes from the word lollipop, and it could mean a lollipop, but it's come to mean pretty much any kind of candy now.
Oh.
Strange enough. So you want some lollies. Freshies and salties are the two different kind of crocodiles in Australia. You can find in Australia. Freshwater or saltwater crocodiles.
Uh-huh.
Brizzy is...
Yeah, that makes a crocodile sound so cute and cuddly.
I know.
Oh, my little fresh... Ah! Ah! Get out of me! You know, I don't know.
Brizzy is what they call Brisbane, which is the capital of Queensland.
Do they do this with any words that are, like, not for, like, you know, polite conversation? I'm just curious.
Like, do they have... curse words that are unique to
you. Yeah, like do they queued up any curse words? Like, oh, my
like
little...
shitties?
My little fucky.
I need to go take some shitties.
That sounds like a candy. New improved shitties. No, with twice that chocolate flavor. Can't see me. I'm actually holding up, like, an imaginary box of shitties for, you know...
Yeah.
The camera that's not, well, here.
Queensland is kind of like the South of Australia, except of course that it's in the north.
Of course.
But, like, you know, we're making fun of Australians, but if...
You know, technically it would be in the south.
Yeah, because it's the hotter part of the country. So, obviously, the hotter part of a country is where the stupid people are going to end up. It must be the sun frying their brains. Yeah, we live in the south, but we're not actually southerners, so we can make fun of southerners.
Moving along, we're coming to EBA's list of 10 women who are not hot, but a lot of guys seem to think are. And coming in at number 10, and this is
Letterman style.
Yeah, it's the worst being number one. So we have number 10 is a tie. It's the only sort of a tie you'll see later on, but this is the only real legitimate tie. Is Britney Spears and Christina Aguilera. And, in fact, any former Mouseketeer-turned-pop star, I think.
I think Christina Aguilera has some real pretty moments and some real skank moments. There's a very large spectrum of looks that Aguilera can...
That's why she's on number 10, because she's really pushing the envelope.
Why don't... tying it with Britney Spears, though. Mm. Well, let's say Christina Aguilera is number 11.
Okay.
So, plus, I like... there's actually a few Christina Aguilera songs that I like.
I'm sorry.
Like that, the song that's... I think it's called Beautiful. And then there's the Genie in a Bottle mashup with that.
Well, technically, that's not really... I mean, you like the Strokes. That's why you like that song.
Yeah. It's a great mashup,
anyway,
though.
Moving on. Number 9, Pamela Anderson. And I would like to say at this time that I would rather fuck... I'd rather fuck an actual Barbie doll.
I don't really think a lot of guys think...
Somebody had to. I mean, obviously, she gets all those sensual scenes, and you know, Pamela Lee and Tommy Lee, that whole, you know, thing. I don't know, maybe that's just partly the voyeuristic kind of, you know, oh, look type deal, but yeah, I mean, I think she's marketed and put out there as being something that guys are supposed to stroke to, and it just doesn't, I mean.
Moving on.
Okay. Number 8, Sigourney Weaver.
She's kind of got that... something manly about her. That...
Yeah. Now, I have to admit, the only movie I've seen her in where she looked halfway decent, and this is because of heavy amounts of makeup, was Galaxy Quest. She looked actually...
Well, I think it was more the hair.
That could have been part of it, too. She's just...
had a different hair.
And the Alien films haven't helped, like, put her in, you know, any sort of status. I mean, she always plays, like, a very butch, you know, with the shaved head and blah, blah, blah.
There was one scene in I think it was in Alien, where she was just walking around in her knickers.
Yeah.
I thought that was actually kind of very interesting.
Okay. Moving on. Now, this is where we're going to start to argue, I believe.
Okay. I'm waiting for something that I can sink my teeth into.
You got it right now. Number seven is Chelsea Clinton.
I don't think most people think she's hot. I think you put that on there just to annoy me.
Maybe. Yeah. Possibly.
I always thought she was a bit of a cutie. She's kind of uglied up over the years, but I think when she was younger.
And
when I was younger, too.
I have to admit, I think the Bush daughters are actually quite attractive. So, and hey, if you offer them booze, they'll apparently sleep with you. So, moving on.
That's been my experience.
Number seven was Chelsea Clinton, which leads me to number six, which is Hillary Clinton.
I've
talked to so many guys in my lifetime who thought, oh my God, when she was president, I say that, you know what I mean, when she was unofficially president.
Well, I think, yeah, like back during the first campaign.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that was, what?
What do you want?
14 years ago?
But there were people who thought she was hot. This is kind of a culminative list over.
She's
look,
prettier than.
Okay, me. Wait. Okay, that gets me to number five. Easter, you know? Okay, that gets me to number five.
Barbara Bush.
No. Is that Jodie Foster.
Yeah, I've never been big on Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster is pretty. I think she's very pretty, but
in
she's
a
not
mom,
hot.
Kind of way.
She's not hot.
So. Who would say Jodie Foster's hot? I know
a lot of people.
Like from Taxi Driver, maybe?
And especially if you wanted to shoot President Reagan on the behest of your neighbor's dog to impress her, you know.
She's very intelligent, though. I like
yes. Well, no, there's nothing against, you know, I'm not necessarily saying these women are unattractive or ugly, although some of them are dogs. Jodie Foster's pretty, but I just don't think she's hot.
She's going to be pissed.
She's going to be pissed off when she hears this. But let's see. Number four, remember I said there was kind of sort of another tie, it's not exactly a tie, you'll understand why I say it, is the Olsen twins.
Uh-huh, okay.
And in fact, I not only have that they're not hot, they in fact never were hot. And I think guys running around talking about how fucking hot they are a bunch of closeted pedophiles, and they all need to check themselves directly into
therapy. I was over at a friend's house, and her daughter had on a movie, I think it was the New York... Something.
New York Minute.
Why
do I remember the name of that? But I can't remember important facts.
And they're actually really pretty in that movie. It didn't look like that bad of a movie either. Looks like they might have pulled off something kind of.
You confound me sometimes.
It's something, you know, if it came on at like 3 o'clock in the morning on HBO or something,
and
I'd probably watch that. Or drunk.
Yeah. Well, number three, I think this one actually is where, you really get down to brass tacks, is Paris Hilton.
Well, she's kind of funny looking.
Kind of?
I think the strange thing about Paris Hilton is she is so aware of, like, when people are taking pictures of her, she turns her head
like a radar
in exactly the same way in every picture, because she knows that is the best angle.
Well, moving on. Number two. Sarah Jessica Parker.
Yeah, she's kind of funny looking.
Kind of funny looking. No, she is funny looking. She's almost like the female version of Alan Combs. Like, you put Alan
so she's
Combs...
an alien.
Yeah. Because Alan Combs is...
I thought she was pretty hot in L.A. Story.
I haven't seen any movies with
that
her.
That was a long... time ago, though.
Okay, number one. Are you ready for number one?
Are we already number one? Because there's nothing on the list that really, so far,
okay.
That I wanted to
Tori
debate.
Spelling.
I don't even know who.
You're kidding, right?
Yeah.
90210, daughter to...
Never watched it.
Daughter to Aaron Spelling?
I know, that's about all I know about her.
Here's the thing about Tori Spelling. I'm not necessarily saying that guys everywhere think she's hot, but I have... throughout my life, unintentionally encountered so many, like, provocative photos of her. You know, she's always got, like, the little tiny baby tee with the panties that are, like, just, like, microns off of revealing, like, some hideous camel toe or something.
Mm-hmm. So no, like, Carmen Electra on the list, or...
Well, see, some of those actually have their moments. I think they're genuinely hot. They don't necessarily attract me, but let me clarify here. I can understand how other people could say that person's hot, even though it's not necessarily my cup of tea. And for the record, I mean, I prefer like Christina Ricci and Jennifer Connelly, you know, that type of
thing. Something about Jennifer Connelly bothers me. I don't know what it is.
I don't know, man. She's got a great rack, and she's not embarrassed to whip it out.
Kind of in the same category as Jodie Foster for me.
Oh, really?
Okay. I am going to play a song by this really good band that I recently discovered while searching for Noam Chomsky MP3s on Soulseek. So they have a song that has Noam Chomsky in the title, so I downloaded it. It was a really good song, and I downloaded the whole album. It's... The band is called Department of Eagles. Okay, I can't remember what it's. I think it's Noam Chomsky Goes on Spring Vacation or something like that. Spring Break for Noam Chomsky. Something like that. So here it is.
Okay, here we go. Enjoy. Song about having brunch with Noam Chomsky
something. And it's Spring Break to Cancun, I think.
It reminds me of
Noam Chomsky Gets Wild.
Noam Chomsky Gone Wild.
Do you think Noam Chomsky's heard that song?
No, but do you think Noam Chomsky's ever exposed himself during a drunken stupor at a Spring Break festival?
No.
Why not?
I'm serious. Better things to do on Spring Break.
I'm serious.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Mutual there. It reminded me a lot of Proofy 73 and Telephone Tel Aviv.
Yeah. The thing I like about Department of Eagles is they've only put out one album, unfortunately, but everything on the album is very varied. So can't pigeonhole the album into one genre.
Yeah.
So half of the songs have lyrics on them.
Okay.
Hopefully we'll get one of the other songs on here sometime. And
alrighty.
Do a search for them on Soulseek or go out and buy their album if you're into
yes,
that.
Yes, siree. You're one of those strange mutant people who actually pays money for music. Yeah.
Movie reviews for movies we've never seen.
I have not heard of this film. It is called An American Haunting. Here is a tale of a documented haunting in actual American history. Now, I just wanted to sidestep real quick to point out that this is a documented haunting in actual American history, unlike all those fabricated hauntings that you keep seeing in Hollywood. In 1818, the Bell family had just settled on a farm in Tennessee. According to legend, daughter Betsy was singled out by an evil spirit and frightened terribly before a murder occurred. That would be the only case in American history when a life was taken as a direct result of a spiritual haunting. Aside from, you know, the supposed murders that took place in the house in
Amityville.
Yeah, Amityville, which I think
I don't think anybody died in that, though.
We're quite sure the Bell family would be glad that a moving picture show was made 2 centuries later just to scare teens out of their wits.
Mm-hmm. Do you think, like, somebody will be making a movie about us 200 years from now, or?
Only if we die tragically.
Yeah.
So let's kill each other on a podcast right after.
Take lives.
Bizarre suicide pact.
So.
How about that?
So I'm going to give it 6 stars.
Hmm.
I mean, it is intriguing, but as far as horror movies go, they usually don't intrigue me very much.
Well,
as opposed to something like Silent Hill or...
Yeah. I'm going to give it 2 stars because...
2?
Yeah. Unfortunately, yeah. I've seen too many horror films that are kind of like... I don't know. You make a good point that the retro element is an interesting part of it, but that's also what they're supposed to be doing with the third Blair Witch movie, so... Right. And that's been planned since they put out the first one. You know, I'm kind of always bashing films that are unoriginal.
Man, that's...
Harsh, I know. Isn't it great? Staying with the horror movie motif, we have Stay Alive. An online video game based on an ancient legend is killing off friends of a small clique. Yeah, that's about it for this plot. Almost makes you wish you were a screenwriter, doesn't it? And that, again, that,
I think I've heard a little bit about that. What strikes me about that is the sci-fi element as opposed to the horror element. And as far as sci-fi goes, I much prefer, like, hard sci-fi as opposed to this... kind of soft sci-fi that we're getting from this.
Again, this is another derivative concept. I mean, this isn't even the first time that this idea has been done. There was a movie in the early 90s that I remember going to see. It starred Robert Englund and the little kid from Terminator 2. It was called, like, Brainwave or something like that, and it was about this trickster guy who, you know, came out of a video game and suck people into the game and killed them. And so, I'm going to probably go and give it probably 1 star because unlike the American Haunting film, this one is actually completely devoid of any pulse
now, as far
or
as,
art.
What was it called? Staying Alive?
Stay Alive.
Stay Alive.
I'm
going to give it 3 stars. It is a stylish movie.
It's style and no substance.
Yeah. So, you know, you got to get something out for that. Throw them a bone.
Okay, well, we'll do X-Men Part 3. Those zany, livable, genetically mutated freaks, and in this time we're not talking about the young Republicans, are at it for the third time, this time battling the societal push to, quote, cure the mutant strain by vaccinating it out of existence. Sure, this presents an enticing opportunity for a mutie.
They must be Aussies.
Yeah, they must be Australians. A mutie like Rogue, who can't actually make physical contact with another human without rapidly sapping their energy and killing them in a matter of seconds. But to the invincible Wolverine or the weather-controlling Storm, who'd want to change? Look for appearances by Kelsey Grammer as Beast and Ben Foster as Angel, in addition to the stocked cast of X-Men regulars.
Kelsey Grammer, that's
Frasier, yes.
That's what I thought. See, I want to see
it. I remember hearing that and going, her? You know, kind of a Scooby, her? Kelsey Grammer in the X-Men,
yeah.
Her?
And you know I love seeing shit get blown up. Especially on a city-wide scale. I mean, that's...
What do you think of stars?
7.
So you're giving 7 stars?
Yeah.
I'm actually going to go give it an 8-star rating on this one. Oh, I got something special. It's a special treat. that those of you listening can't enjoy, but I thought this would be an appropriate time to break out the Pez. These are a gift from our friend Stephanie. So this, I'll give you this saber-tooth-looking Pez dispenser. This, these are promotional Pez dispensers.
What's the other one?
For Ice Age. This is the... I just realized they're Ice Age Pez dispensers.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
This is the John Leguizamo...
Oh, I want to hear John Leguizamo.
Like to come over to our house and hang out? He'd probably be pretty fun until he started getting annoying, which usually takes about 30 seconds.
What character is this?
He's like some sort of like lemming or...
That's kind
of he's a marsupial of some kind. Well, so does John Leguizamo.
It's such a...
Toss-up?
Yeah.
That's the... Give me the Dennis Leary one. That's the Dennis Leary one right there.
You want the Dennis Leary one?
Yeah. Okay. Dennis Leary is someone I actually would like to hang out with.
Yeah.
I actually would hang out with
him. He's a joke thief.
Why do you say that?
He's good. A lot of good stuff from Bill Hicks.
I've never heard that before.
Ask any comedian.
Okay.
They'll say he's a joke thief.
So we're going to lower our Pez dispensers. These are gifts from our friend Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie.
Such a unique sound to a Pez dispenser, opening and closing. There's nothing else that like it in the world.
Are you going to shake, because there's two flavors here, are you going to shake yours up or are you just going to load one? I'm going to be lazy and load
it. It is too much trouble to...
Alternate?
Yeah, because you're going to eat them in like 30 seconds. It's like...
interesting story. Since we're talking about Pez real quick, I'll tell an interesting story about a former employer we both worked for named Amy, who owned a newspaper and also a restaurant, which, you know, newspapers and restaurants have a lot in common. For reasons that I can't mention here because I might be arrested. You know, I'm having trouble operating my... Oh, shit!
See?
Fuck! I just threw Pez all over... Damn it!
Pez is a pain in the butt to get in there.
I just threw Pez all over the room.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I'm dropping on my carpet. I'm still going to pick it up and still going to put it in there.
Well, why don't you just open the other one up and then you'll have a chance.
No, because I'm not going to leave Pez all over the floor. You can't have Pez... There's like a law or something. Like a commandment, thou shalt... It's in the Bible. Look it up.
All right.
Okay.
Tell your story.
My story is this. Sir Mildred Pierce and I used to work together at the Spanish English newspaper, and he brought in a giant Pez dispenser with the head of Homer Simpson. And this giant Pez dispenser dispenses not little pieces of Pez, but entire packages of Pez. And I always thought it would be cool if they made like an even larger version that dispensed actual loaded Pez dispensers. That would be awesome. Anyway, we had this weird conversation where she asked me, she said, well, what is it? I said, it's a Pez dispenser. She said, well, what's a Pez dispenser? And I realized at that moment, because his Pez dispenser was empty, that it's really difficult to explain to someone what a Pez dispenser is without having
especially
actual
a gigantic
Pez in your
Pez.
Hand. Yeah. So I was trying to explain to her, I was like, well, it's this, you know, I know people know what a Pez dispenser is, I would hope, for those of you listening, but... I'll go ahead and for the sake of the story.
Freezy might not know.
You think about it, if you say it out loud, it's really absurd sounding. It's a thin plastic tube, you know, kind of rectangular shape. It's got a cartoon character's head on it. And you open up the cartoon, pull back the cartoon character's head and candy comes out where the throat would be. Like a little miniature cartoon tracheotomy, if you will. And, you know, you put the candy in it and it's Pez and it's fun and, you know, there you go. And she was like, so why wouldn't you just, like, eat the candy? Why would you put it in? And I was like, well, that's the point of having, you know, Pez, you're supposed to. And it's interesting, I thought about that, because you don't see Pez, like, by itself. You never eat Pez. If you do, you're some sort of mutant weirdo, and people won't talk to you because you have bodies buried in your basement. So, anyway, I said this to her, like, I explained it to her, and she goes, well, something like that just can't be very popular. I had no idea how to respond.
Amy is from another planet.
Amy is from another planet. She's awesome. She's very one of the most generous people I've ever met. But
she has seven children.
Yeah, she did have six at the time, but she's going for the full basketball team now. I think
she's made it up there.
This day in history.
So this day in history. I'll do a few here. Let's see. This one really excites me. John Harvey Kellogg patents cornflakes.
Now, this is after he patented circumcision?
Did he patent circumcision?
You know, American circumcision is the responsibility of Kellogg, right?
I wouldn't doubt it, because he was kind of a freak.
He was obsessed with, many people rumored at the time that he was a closet pedophile. To cope with that, he was, like, trying to stop people from masturbating. I'm not making this up.
I don't know.
But stopped people from masturbating. So what he did was he decided
about in the Victorian age.
Decided that a good way to do that would be to have boys circumcised before they, you know, when they were still babies, because I guess it would be more cruel if they were more coherent, you know, in life, and
so
that would prevent that would reduce the pleasure, much in the same way that United States government thought that. Outlawing pubic hair in the Japanese pornography industry would halt Japanese pornography, which it has. I mean, the Japanese aren't known for any bizarre fetish, you know, pornography of any kind.
Anyway, cornflakes.
Turning that women upside down.
Do you like cornflakes? They're one of my favorite cereals. I love cornflakes.
They're good with sugar.
See, I never put sugar on my cereal.
But that's because you're a weirdo.
I'm very.
You probably put soy milk on them too.
No, I like rice milk, not soy milk. There's a difference. Trust me.
Where's the tit on a piece of rice? Or on a soybean, for that matter.
Yeah, so I like boring cereals. About the most exciting I get is Crispix.
What's today's date, by the way? Just for the listeners.
May 31st.
Okay.
Yeah, so he patented cornflakes.
On that day?
I think that was the second cereal. The first cereal was Grape Nuts, and I think that was...
Are you serious?
Yeah, and Grape Nuts was invented by his competitor, but one time former partner, I think.
Interestingly enough, all the Grape Nuts they invented, still in the same boxes they're selling now.
Like you're saying all Grape Nuts are 100 years old?
Well, they certainly taste like.
Oh, I love Grape Nuts.
You would see. I'm telling you, folks, I don't know, he's a
why
fucking weirdo.
Grape Nuts does. Huh?
They're neither grape nor nuts. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm already out of Pez.
That took all of what 30 seconds. Well, a minute maybe.
And
it's hard to eat Pez and talk about castration at this. I mean, circumcision at the same
time. In 1927, the last Ford Model T rolls off the assembly line after a production run of. Over 15 million vehicles. I've always wanted to drive one of those. See how it handles.
Just go to Six Flags.
You know? In 1969, John Lennon and Yoko Ono record "Give Peace a Chance," the first single recorded by a solo Beatle, and they recorded it from their hotel bed during the famous.
If they were naked when they recorded.
Probably. I mean, I record naked a lot when I'm.
Wow.
Okay. In 1977, the Trans-Alaska Pipeline was completed.
Huh. Have you seen it?
Of course. It goes from the south coast up to the north coast, so there's quite a few places where if you're driving across Alaska, you'll have to cross it. So that's kind of cool looking.
You know, in the past, 10 years, like the biggest problem has been environmentalists like trying to dismantle it too.
There was the one guy that shot it. He wasn't an environmentalist or anything, but he was kind of crazy.
Although there have been multiple attempts to damage and you know.
Yeah. Most people up in Alaska are pretty conservative, and I'm surprised there aren't a lot more kind of crazy environmentalist people. So I think they were like 80% voted.
It's really mellow up there. So by the time they get up there, they're really like, you know.
There must be a lot of Republican potheads in Alaska, too.
You mean libertarian?
Yeah.
Oh, boy, that joke never gets tired.
I think I have one more here, and...
Sure.
In 1990, the pilot episode of Seinfeld premieres. And this is kind of weird, because I actually saw this episode a few weeks ago, and it's kind of weird seeing it. I had never seen the pilot before, because it is a little bit different. For one thing, there's no Elaine.
For another thing, Kramer was actually played by a woman.
No. But Kramer's name was actually Kessler. They actually changed his name.
Why did they change his name? Did they explain these changes?
No. They had a, they are eating in a restaurant, but it's not the one that we see throughout the rest of the series. And they had a waitress that you could tell was supposed to be kind of a regular, reoccurring character.
Maybe the Elaine character, sort of?
Oh, she's nothing like Elaine, but, I think, the addition of Elaine, I actually read up on this, and that was kind of a studio thing that they wanted. Yeah. They wanted that in there.
And you have to admit, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, hot.
See, she never did it for me.
Really? I have a thing for... Well, that's just her character she plays.
Well, I can't detach the two, you know. A woman's personality is as much a part of her beauty as... you know, physical.
Yeah, but that's, I'm just saying, that's, she's an actress.
Yeah, I know. Part. I know.
But it's not like she leaves the set and, like, you know, they all hang out in a real apartment and go to a real restaurant or something like that. You do realize that there's, like, this world outside of, you know, like TV sets. And,
I know. That's it. I was going to mention that 1 year ago today, Mark Fell was revealed to be the anonymous source, Deep Throat, in the Watergate scandal.
I thought...
This is kind of boring, really.
Are you serious? Because
You didn't hear that?
No, I thought it was Pat Buchanan, they said.
No. There was rumors, but...
I mean, Deep Throat's been revealed time and time again. The most recently one I heard was Pat Buchanan. I was like, Pat Buchanan, what the fuck?
Oh, you know, I heard Robert Redford and Paul Newman were planning on doing one more movie, because Paul Newman's getting up there in age. He's 81, and he said he wants to do one more movie, and he wants to do it with Robert Redford. So,
wow.
It's not going to be a sequel to Butch Cassidy, obviously.
It's going to be a sequel to All the Presidents, man. Where they actually, like, personally hunt down Richard Nixon and like, you know, there's all sorts of car chases,
like,
and explosions.
The UHF version.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
Called, like Gandhi, too.
Yeah, like massive, like, orgy-based sex scenes. And,
yeah.
You know, they're like, there's this one scene where they randomly are slapping little children as they're walking down the street for no reason, because they're badasses. That's what badasses do.
Did you want to do your song?
Let's change the pace a little bit, and this is a remix of a song by a band, by a friend of ours, lead singer's a good friend, Larry, that was his high school. Mm-hmm. The band is called Cheerleg, and it's a cheerful little song. It's called Vent.
All right.
This is actually a hardcore band. When I say hardcore, I'm talking about, like, the punk, like, Dillinger Escape Plan type of music. So it changes tone entirely because it's a very depressing, dark, loud, angry, horrifying song. So check it out.
Okay.
It's fun. You'll like it.
For you, cause you're too weak. Not meant for this. Release and seek.
Moving your way, you feed her own life. The idea like truth is my relief. It looks in every guy who crosses those glitz. Got a last word. Get her to be you, big, because you're too reserved.
One last leg,
my face.
Make a second by me.
remix by yours truly of the song Vent.
It's probably more cheerful than the original.
Actually, yes, it is more cheerful. The original's got, like, grating guitars and, you know, hardcore's not my favorite genre of music, but I do like it every once in a while. I think, you know, sometimes I get in the mood to go break something, and that's good music to break something with.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. I mean, if I were in the mood to blow up a building or whatever, I'd probably be listening to that.
Yep.
So, I can't remember what I originally said. You said I had said something.
You
about
had a
that,
great review.
The vocals.
You said, this is just about a quote, too.
My ears, makes my ears bleed, or?
No. You said, those vocals sound like something I've heard in my nightmare.
Did I say that?
Yes. And I said, well, I think that's kind of the point.
Yeah.
So, it's still not.
Brilliant.
It's still not like death metal. Which I don't even know why death metal artists write. I use the term artist in that vein very loosely.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know why death metal artists even write lyrics. I mean, honestly, if I was in a death metal band, all my lyrics would be like, take five cups of flour, you know, add in slowly the butter and turn until small peaks appear, you know, it'd be recipes for like, you know, Brown Betty.
You should probably just use the real microphone when your pants are
It's, you couldn't see me. I was holding like my fist up like it was a mic. I should do the death, like the 80s metal, you know, with the fist in the air. The someday love will find you type thing.
Zombie, pirate, ninja, robot, monkey news. Little metal look.
I think it's pretty obvious what the robot news is, so.
Okay.
I'm sure it's been all over the news, but the inductees to the, Robot Hall of Fame have been announced.
The Robot Hall of Fame?
The Robot Hall of Fame.
That, please tell me Bender's in there somewhere.
He is not yet. Each year they induct about five different robots. And I like the fact that they have a nice, healthy mixture of both fictional robots and real-world robots. So do you want me to tell you what the inductees for this year? Okay. The first ones I'm going to do are the fictional ones. And Maria from the movie Metropolis, have you ever seen that?
No, I've heard of it.
It's from like 1927, I think.
Yeah. In the future, people will have zippers and Q-tips.
Gort from The Day the Earth Stood Still. I'm sure you've seen that.
I haven't seen it, but I know what you're talking about.
Oh, man, that's a really good movie.
Needs women.
I don't think that's from that movie.
No.
The last fictional one is David from the movie AI, Artificial Intelligence. Have you seen that? Steven Spielberg.
Mm-hmm.
I like that movie a lot more than most people do, I think.
I thought it was okay, too. It was just depressing as hell.
Yeah. So the two non-fictional robots that have made it into the Robot Hall of Fame this year are the Sony Aibo, the little robot dog. Ironically, this is the year they are discontinuing the manufacture of those robot
dogs.
What a shame. I've never seen one in person, but I'd sure like to get my hands on one. And the last robot is the SCARA, which you probably haven't heard of. It's I actually only wrote the acronym in here, unfortunately, in my notes, because I would have liked to have said what SCARA stands for, but I can't remember. But it's an industrial.
It stands for socialist.
Yeah.
Communist aggressor robot assassin. So it's like a Maoist, like, it's got a beret like Che Guevara, and it's always like hanging out in really pretentious coffee houses and assassinating like anyone who comes in who's like, hey, let's go over to Walmart. And then it secretly sneaks up behind them and strangulates them with a length of piano wire.
Mm-hmm. It stands for the Selective Compliance Assembly Robot Arm. And
this is just their arm.
It's just an arm.
So it's not going to strangle anybody with piano wire unless it gets, like, assistance from another.
If there's two of them next to
there's two of them. They have to, like, work together.
Yeah.
Like, okay, move forward. Yeah.
It's what's called a Cartesian system.
Ah.
Because, like, you know, like, Cartesian coordinates in space. Basically, it's capable of moving a single point anywhere along three axes.
I've seen pi.
And you can stick whatever you want on the end there.
I've seen cube. So.
Is that in there?
That was my introduction to Cartesian coordinates.
Ah. Okay.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's pretty good. thing to have in there, I guess.
Is that where the word cartologist, like, for map making, are those two related at all? Well?
Okay. Cartesian is named after...
That's a realistic question. Why do you look at me like that? Like, he gives me a look like, you fucking idiot.
Cartesian comes from Descartes. He's the first one that described such a
really?
System.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
And cartography comes
Why is from, it not de-Cartesian?
Well, because de is an article.
Oh, this is, what is it, of?
Yeah.
Huh. So his name was Ray of Cart?
Something like that.
Hi, I'm Ray of Cart. How's it going? Y'all enjoying the show?
Anyway.
See, you're acting all kind of silly, but that was funny. Come on, you're laughing.
Did you have anything else you wanted to bring up, or,
Not any specific thing I wanted to bring up. I thought before we get to reviews of the world, since you don't want to end it on politics, we need to talk about politics a little bit first.
Sure.
Why don't you pull up the, like, Yahoo or AP or Reuters or something, and just see what the headlines are, see if anything grabs your attention. Kind of like you're going with the This Day in History type thing.
Maybe? Okay. Let's see. I'm looking on Google News. I usually look on Google News, that kind of stuff.
Any particularly frustrating or infuriating stories? Oh, the thing I was not aware of, the one about the internet, the ISPs, we could talk about this, the ISPs trying to pass a law that would require, that would allow them, rather, to force websites, webmasters, and web companies like to pay them money so that people who are users like of the internet can have access to those websites. Essentially, like, if you own www.google.com, web host Verizon will say, well, if you want our customers to be able to access google.com, you got to pay us, you know, whatever we demand. They're trying to pass a law about this. Now, as a libertarian, I look at this and I say, and I'm curious what your opinion is, I look at this and I say, well, am I relaying this correctly? You know what I'm talking about?
I've never heard of this.
You haven't heard of this? It's,
no.
I posted this to the site which shall not be named, and they lambasted me as it being like 2 week old news. I just read about it last Thursday for the first time.
Yeah.
But basically, my take on it is that as a libertarian, I have a hard time saying that, you know, the government should prevent that type of thing from happening.
Yeah. Yeah.
But also at the same time, there's three parts to this. I also have a hard time feeling like that's a just thing to do. Like, it does feel like a restriction on free speech to a certain extent. I'm not sure how I rationalize that.
As a libertarian, I say if an ISP wants to shoot themselves in the foot by coming up with some strange money-making scheme, I will say this, it's not going to happen. I mean, it's absurd. It's an absurd plan. It's not going to happen.
Well, I think part of what's frustrating about it is the way that it's being approached to customers, which is that there's this massive propaganda campaign that's about to unleash where they're saying that they're actually doing it. It's very Orwellian, which makes it – anytime something's Orwellian, I think it's that much more frustrating, no matter how feasible it is. Like, every year there's some congressman or senator – like, I believe it was Orrin Hatch. I might be mistaken on this. It was like Orrin Hatch or Tom DeLay or one of those, you know – really, like, whacked out, you know, guys who doesn't know what the fuck they're talking about, who proposed that there be a system implemented so that when people do illegal file trading, that a electronic pulse is sent to the computer that causes it to explode.
Yeah, that's awesome. They should implement that for
yes.
sure.
And, you know, I mean, that's why not? Yeah, while we're at it, let's, you know, also make it so that one of those, like, cartoon-style punching gloves on a little spring, like, pops out of the monitor and punches the person in the face. And then the little miniature birds go around their head in a circle, you know. And stars, you know, appear, and they kind of do that dazed thing in a big, like, cartoon lump. Maybe I'm taking the joke too far, but anyway.
Yes, definitely.
but beside the point, the Orwellian element is that they're actually portraying it as though they are advocates of freedom, and that people who are opposed to this type of legislation are trying to get their hands on the internet. And I don't remember the verbatim quote, but the actual, like, catchphrase of this propaganda campaign is something like, keep your hands off the internet, or something like that, which is just, like, a bizarre, surreal twist to the whole thing.
Yeah. I'll have to look into it.
So that's us talking about politics. So we got that out of the way. So you guys can, you know, that's the part everyone's sick for. And move on to
Mildred Reviews the World.
The first one is a movie or TV show.
Okay, movie or TV show. So, Old Boy.
Old Boy. That's a great movie. I think I gave it 5 thumbs up already last time when we mentioned it, but
we mentioned it as a standard.
Yeah,
but
I want to.
We didn't actually give it a review.
Yeah. I think most of our listeners probably haven't seen Old Boy, so if you get a chance,
it's available in the United States now.
I think most people will be very pleased by at least some element of the film. There's something in it that'll appeal to everyone. Whether you like a nice twist, or you just like a nice weird fucked up story, or you like this, you know, like a nice visual presentation.
So. It is not a pleasant film, and it's got a very. It doesn't start out this way. I mean, it's very twisted at the beginning, but not the kind of twisted it gets towards the end. It's very, very, very twisted in a way that you will not expect, and it kind of slams you out of nowhere.
Yeah, I'm gonna stick to my 5.
Okay.
Number 2 is a song, band, album, music thing, whatever.
Okay. 6 Days by DJ Shadow. You know the one I'm talking about?
Yeah. That's,
I have to be honest.
There's something haunting about it.
Interestingly enough, when I first heard the songs that were leaked to me off the private press, I hated that song.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it with a passion. And then after, and it wasn't like an intentional, like, you know, I don't punish myself by listening to stuff I don't like. I don't remember how I ended up, like, I guess I just listened to it again for a second time with fresh ears a long time later, and I realized how remarkable it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it also became more timely, too, because he did that prior to September 11th, and then it seemed like it almost took on an anthemic quality after September 11th.
Yeah. I can't think of anything bad about it, but maybe just because it's not fresh in my mind. I'll give it 3 thumbs.
3? Wow.
Yeah, 3 thumbs up. Maybe 1 because I know it's gotten stuck in my head sometimes. And
1
thumbs down for that.
For getting stuck in your head?
Yeah.
That's a good thing.
No, it's not.
It shows it has staying power.
Category 3 was a book.
Jimmy Corrigan, Boy Genius.
Because you're reading that right now, aren't you?
Yes, I am. I am about maybe 2/3 into it. It's getting a little less depressing as it's going into the story of the father's childhood.
Yeah. I think that book is the work of a madman, without a doubt. The intricacies in which he's created these drawings are just...
I get this feeling that each panel is drawn by hand, but they all look identical in a certain way. And that's, I think, part of the reason... I think that really I think that really amplifies the depressing quality is it's so repetitive.
Yeah, definitely.
Which is, I think, part intentional on the part of the fact that Jimmy Corrigan, the younger Jimmy Corrigan, is supposed to have kind of a repetitive life.
Yeah.
So I think that kind of amplifies that a little bit.
I think, though, it is one of my favorite graphic novels. I'm going to give it 3, maybe 4. It is a really good graphic novel. It's really long, too. And he could have done something short, but he really went the extra mile by really just... I'm going to give it 1 thumbs down because it is...
So ungodly depressing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he could have done something that was kind of cheerful, if you want
to. I haven't gotten to the ending yet, so I don't know if it, like...
I'm also going to give it 1 more thumbs down for being chewed up beyond repair. So,
right.
2 thumbs down, and what was it, 3 thumbs up?
Yeah. So, technically 1 thumb up.
Yeah. So, moving on. Number 4 is a video game.
Video game.
Yeah.
Why not go for the terrible 2 and say Katamari Damacy? Or, well, let's go with We Love Katamari.
Okay. Let me ask you this. I was always pretty open to the idea of playing it. But before you had played it, did you want to play it? I mean, did it strike you as something?
Weird about me, all right? When I hear, like, all these people walk around and say, oh, man, this is so great,
yeah.
It immediately turns me off.
Mm-hmm.
And the more people insist, oh, this is so good, like massive groups of people, I'm just a rebel like that. It's weird.
Yeah.
The more people insist, the less interest I have.
Yeah.
So everyone on the site, which shall not be named, we're talking about it.
Pow.
And I was just turned off by the idea. Plus, it's Japanese, and I'm thinking, like, you know, a woman upside down in a bathtub. And stuff like that. So, based off that, I was just completely turned off by it. Yeah. And I heard the plot, I was like, what the hell is that about, you know? I mean, I guess the plot is actually what draws most people to the game for real, because you tell people what it's about, they're like, that can't possibly be a real game, and then sure enough it is.
Yeah.
But, anyway...
So I figured that was what you were going to say, pretty much.
Well, what happened was, it wasn't that I played the game, it was just that, I guess maybe having it in the house, having access to it, like, opened up, you know, the idea, so...
Yeah, definitely, I think probably most people that are listening to this have probably played it, and...
I would hope so. Probably if you haven't...
I don't think there's a lot of people out there that don't like Katamari Damacy.
Who have played it, that is.
Yeah, exactly. I'm sure there's some haters out there that just look at the pictures or whatever.
I've already stopped the podcast to go jerk off to, you know, a woman upside down in a bathtub.
So, definitely Katamari Damacy. I'm going to give it 4 thumbs up. It's a classic.
Why not full 5? I'm curious.
Well, I think that's just, it takes a lot to get me to give 5 thumbs up.
So. I would give it the full 5. I think it's, for what it is, it's a perfect game.
Yeah.
There isn't much, especially with part 2, there isn't much else they could add to it, except for giving you new places and new objects to roll up.
I think they probably could do that. I think.
Now, I will give it 1 thumbs down. I think when I tell you why, I think you're going to agree with me. Because... while I know he's supposed to be annoying, and I understand, I appreciate that element of it in a certain way, the king talks too much. And I think it's cool that they use scratching.
Yeah, that is weird, isn't it?
I don't know whose idea that. And it sounds like real scratching, too, because I can tell what the sound is.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you're going to give it how many thumbs?
I'm going to give it 1 thumbs down for just not being big enough. I think they really could. Category 5 is a food.
A food.
Foodstuffs.
The traditional, like, stereotypical Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Okay, yes, a Kraft macaroni and cheese.
The gold standard
four thumbs up. It's just, there's nothing better. Except, of course...
Nothing, I wouldn't go that far, nothing better.
Well, as far as in the macaroni and cheese universe. So,
well, in all of fooddom, in all the culinary arts.
Well, you know,
like filet mignon.
If the category was macaroni and cheese, then I would give it 5 thumbs up.
Okay.
But since we are comparing it to all of the other food in the world, I do have to
limit the 4.
Yeah.
4.
Yeah.
I don't know if I. 4,
I like the spirals though better than just the macaroni.
Yeah, they do taste the whole. What?
Well, it's a texture thing, and I think it does taste a little bit different because I think the cheese is coating it a little bit differently.
Sublimates itself into the macaronial surface below the epidermis.
And even though it said they both say on there that they weigh the same, like 5.1 ounces, I think is how much it is. A bowl of spirals seems a little bit smaller. So.
Well, I've noticed that too. Like that you buy, like I bought the SpongeBob before, which has got the blue SpongeBobs in it. I never understood that.
Yeah.
And that's certainly smaller.
Yeah.
I don't know how that is.
Same mass.
Yeah,
according to the people that are measuring each
individual
box and publishing
the Kraft people. Obviously. It's a Kraft macaroni and cheese conspiracy, and it must be exposed. And we're the vanguard. Yeah, you know, we talked about deep throat earlier. And this is coming full circle because we're going to expose the conspiracy. You know, we've got,
We could just weigh it ourselves and independently verify it.
There you go, being all, like realistic. And
so anyway, a thumbs down, I can't think of... You know, I will give it a thumbs down because the actual recipe that they want you to follow...
I have to admit, all the varieties pretty much taste the same, though. I've tried the white cheddar, and I've tried the extra creamy, and they all pretty much taste the same.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of like ramen.
I suspect all they do is they change, like, the box, and the price a little bit. Like, ha, 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 they'll fall for this.
It's like ramen all tastes the same.
It could be.
Okay, anyway, the next category is a place that you thought of.
Nome, Alaska.
Nome, Alaska, man, what a weird place. So, I'm going to get pretty extreme on this one, because... it is such an extreme place. It's great in the summer. And
I imagine I'd probably like it a lot more in the summer than Augusta.
Oh, I think most people would.
Is it very humid?
No, it's a very dry place, actually. I think it's probably in a desert,
It's tundra.
Tundra's pretty desert-like as far as, the rainfall gets. I think it technically qualifies for desert status. It looks kind of like Scotland.
Have you ever been to Scotland?
I've seen pictures of Scotland.
Okay. I've seen Trainspotting. That's all it is.
As far as, like Scotland's got those kind of rolling hills and a lot of lack of trees in a lot of places, that's kind of like what Nome looks like. No trees on the coast, at least. You can go inside to the...
I remember looking at your photos, and there's like this one tree, and that's it.
Somebody might have put that there. So occasionally somebody will bring a tree into town and plant it, and a few years later it'll...
Like, smuggle a tree in?
Give up, yeah.
And the TEA, the Tree Enforcement Agency, will do something. They call them T for short.
So Nome has like about 3,000 people, maybe 3,500 people. Half of them are Eskimos.
How many of them smoke pot?
Well, I don't know.
Well, you should go find out right now. You got to do a door-to-door.
Pot's really expensive in Nome.
Do a door-to-door poll.
Pot's really expensive in Nome. But, I mean, everything is expensive in Nome. So, gallon of milk costs $5.
How much a gallon of gas is?
Well, they only change the price once a year. Because they import it once a year.
Yeah.
They fill up their tanks. And
a lot of cars in Nome.
They set the price.
It's a virtual traffic jam.
There's cars. There's a lot of cars. I'll tell you one thing. Once a car gets to Nome, it ain't leaving. Because it's just cheaper to buy another car when you leave, That's pretty much the case for a lot of stuff. A lot of things come to Nome, but it just...
It's like a roach motel.
Yeah.
So that's our review of Nome. It's a roach motel.
I'm going to give it 3 thumbs up and 3 thumbs down.
3 thumbs down. What are the 3 thumbs down? I kind of get what the 3 thumbs up are for.
Cold and... Lonely, and...
I like cold.
It's nothing to do but drink, and... Nome has a lot of bars.
Yes.
A lot of bars in Nome. Supposedly it has the longest bar in the United States, too. At the...
Right, it's right on the Alaskan
Pipeline.
Nome
Tavern, so...
They built the top.
I'm kind of dubious of that claim, though.
Yeah.
It is pretty long, though.
Is that kind of like those cities, come see the world's largest concrete harmonica,
Yeah. Well, there isn't a lot of concrete harmonicas in the world, but, I mean, there are a lot of bars. And that the longest one would just happen to be in Nome is kind of...
Yeah.
Kinda...
Or, like, those places that have, like, world's greatest coffee.
Well, it's like the claim that Augusta has the second widest street in America.
Yeah, that's
I'm kind of skeptical of that.
What's the first, by the way?
Well, a lot of people say Augusta has the first, but...
So is that why you're skeptical? Because you think it's actually the first?
No. I would be less skeptical that it's the second widest.
Yeah.
Just because,
I'm not following the grammar of that sentence. You would be less... I don't know.
So, there you go. You want to do your two categories now? And then we'll do my favorite category after that.
I actually have these pre-written down. The next... What is this number?
We'll be up to number... 7 here, and I'll actually go ahead and...
Number 7 is an event.
An event.
And I'm going to do something timely, so you probably already know what I'm going to say. The James Brown Music Festival.
Ah. I didn't...
I thought this would be interesting hearing it. No.
I mean,
nobody went, so,
Well, a few people...
And in fact, this is interesting. It was rumored that James Brown himself wasn't going to show up, so...
Did he?
Yes, he did show up.
Okay.
Did you see the photo in the Chronicle, the Augusta Chronicle, of the first day?
No.
They show a photo of the Comet where all the big acts are playing, and they are like not very close to the stage, and you see about 6 people.
Well, it's the first year, hopefully it'll catch on. Because, something like that, people could really turn into something a little bit
now,
more than it is.
I'm going to just step aside real quick here and give a little exposition about this. The James Brown Music Festival is controversial. I know a lot of you are probably saying, well, it's controversial because of James Brown himself. And that's actually not the controversy. What it is that the guy who runs it is a fellow by the name of Champ Walker, who's the son of Charles Walker, who's a, would you say, disposed? Not disposed. How do you pronounce that? Deposed?
Imprisoned.
He's currently in jail for fraud. Having to do with charities. Charities they had that basically were charities that benefited, like, it would benefit, like, kids and stuff like that, and all the money went straight to him. Mm-hmm. There's, like, 111 counts of fraud, and he was, like, found guilty of all of them.
Yeah, poor guy.
Yeah, poor shyster guy, yeah.
He's chilling with Robin Williams now, so.
Robin Williams, not the comedian, there's another local politician, the same name, who is not as nearly as hairy.
And his stand-up sucks.
Yeah. But, and Linda Shrinko, too. What's up with that?
Her stand-up?
Yeah,
her stand-up. Is a little bit better.
She's going to jail for... There's also a sex
thing
with her, too, a sex scandal. But anyway, Champ Walker is his son, and the James Brown Music Festival is supposed to go to all these charities, which, of course, people are highly skeptical due to his father, you know, having these charities that benefited him and ended up being embezzlement that, you know, likely the same thing is. The controversy is also due to the fact that Champ Walker declared this without actually asking James Brown, hey, you want to put on the, you might be put on this festival. He just did it. And I couldn't possibly have made this up. He got all these bands from out of town, most of them not soul, R&B, or funk bands, which I thought was a travesty. He didn't ask George Clinton, Parliament Funkadelic. He didn't ask Bootsy Collins. He didn't even ask local funk bands. Like, we have some here in town that would gladly have done this show for free.
Yeah. Well, like I said, it's first year. It'll...
He required all bands to perform free, and he had a contract where once they signed on, if they didn't show up, he was going to sue them. But again, this is the part that blows my mind. And like I said, I couldn't possibly have made this up. If James Brown himself did not show up, which did happen, luckily, but yesterday... Then Champ Walker was going to sue James Brown for not showing up at the festival to honor James Brown. So anyway, that's the exposition for our listeners.
I'm gonna give it two thumbs up for the concept because it is a good concept.
Maybe I think it's three. A great concept.
Maybe I'll give it three. But I'm gonna get three thumbs down for the
listeners. I give four thumbs down. The next one, this would be item number seven, and this is an idea.
Oh my.
Now, this
concept,
was something,
whatever.
Yeah, concept, an idea, something kind of nebulous in that sense.
Awesome.
Not something as concrete. So, this is something I heard about. It was popularized in the bigger cities due to a small apartment space. Hanging Christmas trees upside down to place the presents under them with the, you know, more available space that, that provides.
You know, on a practical level, it sounds, you know, pretty good, but it just seems like
The
hanging
Christmas
a cross
tree
commits, like, upside down or something.
And mean, also, I'm also tempted to, like, make a Christmas decoration that's like a suicide note. You know? Like,
so,
I couldn't stand those blinking lights, you know?
Yeah, I've never heard of it. And
really? You've never heard of that?
It sounds kind of dangerous.
I heard of that from, like, 15 different places, like TV and people.
Like, I wonder
people.
What they use to attach it to the... ceiling. I mean.
Well, that's part of it. There's some ingenious marketing company that they sold this device and it caught on, you know.
It seems like, it sounds like something you'd see in Futurama. You know?
Yeah, it does.
Because, I mean.
Santa Claus was banned 40 years ago. Right.
So, I'll give it a two on a practical level, but I'm going to give it two thumbs down for just being so weird and.
Kind of almost like, sapping some of the Christmas spirit, which I know you're not big into the holidays.
Yeah,
but.
It just seems like inherently like an anti-Christmas message.
Yeah.
So, I mean,
like anyone who would walk in would not take you seriously from that around.
Yeah, pretty much.
They'd be like, so you hate Christmas, huh? No, why do you say that?
So number nine, we're at my favorite one. Do you remember number nine?
An English royal.
Yeah, British royal.
British royal. Okay. Henry VIII.
Henry VIII?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm Henry VIII. I am. Henry VIII, I am. Do I like green eggs and ham?
Okay.
I do not like them in a guillotine.
We're going to cut this part out?
No.
Okay, so Henry VIII. He is a good obvious choice. He's the reason he is so popular is because he is so interesting. He's a very interesting royal. He had six wives.
Not at once.
No, he did have some of them annulled.
There's my unfair.
He did screw over four of those wives, so I'm gonna have to give him four thumbs down.
Screw over.
Well, okay, there's Catherine, which was his first wife, and he was married to her for, you know, a long time, up to like 20 years, I think, but she did not produce a male heir.
And did she produce female heirs?
Yes, she had one daughter, Mary.
Mary?
Bloody Mary, yes.
No thanks, I'm fine.
And he got bored of her, so he locked her up in a castle and an old marriage, and that was a big deal, and that it kind of split the Catholic Church apart. And
you would think, after, like, the third or fourth wife, that the other woman would be like, hey, maybe this isn't such a good idea.
Well, but there is an attractive quality to being Queen of England.
Yeah, but if it goes along with, like, you know, having your head cut off or being imprisoned in a tower, I think most people would be like,
okay,
you know, look at it this way, okay? Like, if there was some way that you could go, hey, I could win the lottery. Like, guaranteed, win the lottery. But at the same time, I will probably get shot to death in an alleyway by a guy named,
that was really stupid on that level was the fifth one, and I think her name was Catherine, too.
Not very creative at that point in history with the nobility.
Of his wives, there was only three different names for among his six wives.
That makes it confusing.
There was two. So yeah, the second wife was Anne Boleyn, obviously, and she's definitely the most. I think she's probably the most famous of the wives, because she was beheaded, which was really unheard of at the time, and kings didn't go around having their wives' head cut off.
Well, what was how exactly did he go about, hey, why don't you cut her head off, you know? You burned the toast the last time.
They came up with some very blatantly false charges to have her killed off.
The idea what those charges were?
Yeah, that she was sleeping around, that she had sex with her own brother. They were blatantly false. I mean, I don't think any historian believes that they were true. I mean, a lot of them were easily debunked. But the reason why was she wasn't somebody that rolled over. She was outspoken, and I think that kind of rubbed him the wrong way. He liked it at first, though, when he was just having a regular affair with her.
Huh.
But I think he found that attractive.
Do you think it was more than just producing a male heir that maybe he also liked the idea of being able to have sex with, you know, a number of women?
Well, yeah,
He's the fucking king.
Yeah, of course.
For lack of a better term in this context.
I mean, I think he was at a point in his life where he's probably having kind of a midlife crisis. Because most, you know, these five...
Well, thank God these days, men, instead of, you know, cutting off their wives' heads, they go buy a sports car.
Yeah.
I think we've evolved as a species to that point.
So she did produce an heir, but it was another female, and that was a big thing, and I think she had a stillborn male heir.
Ooh.
And that was the
that
was the last straw, because a few weeks later was when they started the whole conspiracy to have her head cut off. So,
I'm sure she probably like worked long and hard to like really fuck him over with that. Like, yeah. this will teach him. that's horrible. How can I joke about stuff like that and get away with it?
Well, it was a long time ago. You're allowed to.
Oh, okay.
So you know, history plus time equals comedy.
Yeah, that reminds me.
Woody Allen said
that's a question I've had for a long time. I've always wondered, kind of halfway jokingly, halfway seriously, just real quick as an aside. What do you think is the accepted amount of time for which a person can be dead and buried before it's like socially acceptable to dig up their body and put it on display in a museum?
Okay, I was going to give him one thumbs up for the fact that when he did have his wife's head cut off, he didn't go with just the standard court. Axe man with the big rusty axe. He actually sent off to France for this expert swordsman that would make sure to do it.
Okay, honey, I'm going to cut your head off, but luckily for you, I'm having a special swordsman imported.
Exactly. I mean, it's
specific. Yeah, just for you, honey. It's a special thing. Yeah, because I love you that much.
That's pretty much what he probably said. So she was said to have quipped, you know, in response that, you know, thankfully I do have a small neck. So,
wow.
At least she had a sense of humor about the whole thing. And on the, you know, when she was about to be headed, she didn't say anything bad about the king. She held him in very high esteem. And I think a lot of historians say she probably did that to help, protect her daughter. So,
Huh, that's interesting. So do you think at any point in time, like, the daughters attempted got together and attempted assassination? Because, you know, they had to, No, on the king. Because, you know, they had to really resent the fact that he kept bumping off their moms.
Oh, they were...
That type of thing creates a common bond with people, you know.
There wasn't a bond between Mary and Elizabeth, that's for sure, so... And I think they were probably pretty young when Henry finally did kick the bucket. So Jane Seymour was the third wife. She was Anne Boleyn's lady-in-waiting, too. So
that sounds almost
in a literal.
Like sense. almost like, hey, you know, I'm getting tired of that, but I'm into that.
Well, she was always at Anne's side, so he obviously caught the king's eye, and she was definitely not as outspoken as Anne, because she had that first-person experience of watching the whole marriage come together and then fall apart. So,
interestingly, on a side note with this, too, we're probably going to spend more time talking about this than anything. when they show you the bedrooms of particularly the kings, there are these strategically placed seats on either side of the bed.
Mm-hmm.
And you know what I'm talking about, what they're for.
Yeah.
When the king and the queen had sex, there were people whose job was to watch them to make sure that the offspring was definitely of this union. You have to wonder if that was it was an envied job or a job that people hated? Like, oh, I gotta go watch, hairy ass.
I suspect
and
it was probably,
fuck, and, yeah.
It was probably a, honor.
You think?
Yeah. So Jane Seymour is probably best known for being Anne's replacement and the mother of the future King of England, Edward. She did produce a male offspring, and she died while doing it. So she was not one of the ones that Henry screwed over.
So he probably was happy with her. How ironic, huh?
Well, he did take a few years to recover as far as, I mean, he didn't go off and marry right away.
Huh.
His fourth wife was Anne of Cleves, and she was kind of a mail-order bride, basically.
Ah.
I think from Germany, he sent off, like, the court painter to produce a painting of her. He brought her back. He's like, yeah, man, she's pretty hot. And then when she arrived,
he go through, like, a whole series of paintings, like, do you think he had, like, multiple wives to choose from?
I'm sure.
Like, a painting for each one of them? And, like, I'm going to see number two again at the same order.
I mean, the marriages of royals are very strange. Like, his first wife, Catherine of Aragon, was actually his brother's widow. Because he was not... His brother, I think his name was Richard, was betrothed to Catherine since the age of three. And they did go on to marry, but before he became king, he died. So, to keep the alliance going, because she was a princess from Spain.
That sounds like Star Wars.
Well, yeah. It's Star Wars is based on that kind of universe, I think. Yeah. So, okay. I'm sure in the Star Wars universe, they married for alliances and stuff. Yeah. So,
because I would, totally, get with Queen Amidala. And by Queen Amidala, I mean
Natalie Portman. Yeah. Yeah.
She's also hot, by the way.
Yes, yes. She is.
She's nowhere near the list.
Yeah, yeah. Anne of Cleves, he got tired of her pretty quick, and then he married Catherine.
Did he bump her off?
No, he just annulled the marriage and sent her off to him. I think her official title after that was like Sister of the King or something. It was really weird. And she actually, I think, occupied one of the castles that Catherine married on. Used to be in, which was supposedly kind of dank and
humid. Do you think like there were people who like condescended to her from that point on, like, oh, she's not really the queen, and like oh, she thinks she's so great because she used to be married to the king, and she's
behind
a bitch.
Her back. I'm sure behind her back. So
yeah,
his fifth wife was another Catherine, and she was kind of like the Tudor slut. He made a real bad decision and. Getting with her. He was getting on in age too, and he had like festering boils on his leg that was like the result of a horse riding accident. And for his whole life he had this leg wound that was really supposedly very pungent and I mean, I can't blame her. I mean, she was like in her 20s or something, and she was sleeping around, so she got the Annabelle treatment with the
head cut off.
Yeah, she got her head cut off. So, I don't know much about his last wife other than the fact that she survived him. So, another Catherine too. So, I'm gonna give him four thumbs down for each of the wives that he screwed over.
Okay.
And I'm gonna give him two thumbs up for one for the thoughtful gesture he gave Anne Boleyn on the sword thing. And he of course produced Elizabeth, who is one of the most renowned royals in
Okay, so now we are on to the wild card. The 1980s. I know, we're not gonna try, we're not gonna break down, I mean, just 1980s as a whole.
Oh, I know. I've never been a big fan of the 80s.
Really?
I don't like the music.
Really?
I don't care for most of the movies. They tend to look really dated in a way that I don't like. I like the 70s, I like the 90s, but the 80s, not doing it for me.
Wow. You suck.
Something just...
I'm gonna give you way like too, four thumbs down just for
way
that.
Way too inherently kitschy, so...
I think that's his charm.
Yeah, I'll give it at least one thumbs up, because that's when U2 was, that was when they came about. But at least
somehow I should have known you'd frame, like your entire review.
I'll give it another thumbs up, because I'm sure something good happened. I always associate the space program with the 80s, the space shuttle and stuff, and I...
Well, see, that's what I mean. I think we did a lot of stuff that, I think if I look back and think about all the things that happened... I go, yeah, that was really cool. Yeah. Oh, yeah, that was really cool. Yeah. We did that. That was really cool. And that kind of stopped. During the 90s, it was like, bam! Oh, nope, can't do cool stuff anymore. Now we got to be depressed.
What about the internet? Internet came out of the 90s. I think everything cool that happened in the 90s was just more subtle.
Yeah, that's true. And but it was based everything on was substance. Like, I think in the 80s, too, it was all very flamboyant.
It was a flamboyant era. So.
We had a flamboyant president. He wasn't flamboyant in the sense that he wasn't like he didn't break dance or anything.
Yeah.
But he was flamboyant in the sense of he was an actor, mm-hmm. and
he kind of pales in comparison to Bill Clinton though. I think
Bill Clinton, that regard as far as the showmanship.
But I don't think we would have had a Bill Clinton had it not been for Reagan.
That's true too. So, yeah. I wouldn't argue with that.
Bill Clinton.
So we're gonna raise it up to a 3 now then?
I'll give it 3 stars. I mean, it wasn't that bad.
So thumbs down.
Thumbs down.
Cold War.
Well, I don't think the Cold War was that bad. The Cold War of the 80s was very superficial compared to what we had had.
Didn't you at some point in your life have some sort of fear that you're gonna be duped at any time?
I honestly have a very distinct memory of in third grade of playing bad guys and good guys, and somebody was Russian and somebody wasn't, and I said to them, the Russians really aren't that bad. Why are we playing this? So I was a real killjoy in that sense. But
I remember in grade school having nuclear drills.
Yeah.
Now we didn't duck and cover under the desk, the wood desk like our parents did. We actually had shelters. I remember. But I remember those fostering a real serious fear in my mind that at any moment I could be vaporized.
Yeah.
My parents I've had to really change their mind on this over time, because they were like, well, you don't know what it was like. It was a constant air raid. So I was like, no, I don't know what it's like exactly, but I do kind of know what it's like. In the sense, and I think, and I've mentioned this before, I'm going to get into a really deep tangent here, and I didn't mean to, but it's true. If you look at the movies about the Cold War during the 60s, the movies of the Cold War, about the Cold War, were mainly, it was kind of metaphorical. It was like, the Invasion of Body Snatchers was a really big, I think that was a deliberate metaphor for communism. And most of the invasion, science fiction, UFO movies, I think were metaphors for communism too, because if you look, there's some certain reoccurring themes. First off, there's this kind of idea that the Russians, because of their ideology, were so different that they were very alien to us, but humanoid at the same time. All the societies were very totalitarian and all like-minded, and that's the way we looked at the Russians, is no one has their own personality. They're all one big group of people, and they kind of instead of, and this is when people looked at communism during that time, instead of it being an ideology. It was almost like a disease, like a virus.
Yeah.
Like one day the guy, your neighbor was a cool guy, and the next day he was a communist, and all of a sudden, you know, he wanted to kill you, and he was this hive creature. I know I'm exaggerating, but I think I'm pretty on point with this. The 70s didn't really have Cold War movies that I remember. I can't think of any. I'm sure there were a few, but they weren't as prevalent as they were in the 60s and the 80s. Now, the interesting thing is, in the 60s, we invariably won. We defeated communism. We defeated the invading aliens through our can-do American spirit and our spunk and whatever you want to call it. But in the 80s, we invariably lost.
Mm.
You think of all the movies like The Day After, Red Dawn. Red Dawn kind of ends on a slight upbeat note, but it really doesn't end on a very positive note because a bunch of the main characters get killed, and it seems like it's a really hopeless fight. We're just struggling.
Yeah.
A lot of the movies during that time, I remember more than just those two. We lost. And I think that was a different thing, too. And I think our parents were really subject to that because those movies weren't geared for them. So my dad didn't watch Red Dawn. Yeah. He didn't think it was interesting. I watched it.
I do give our parents' generation the benefit of the doubt that it probably was scarier.
I think it was scarier, but I think they're being unfair to think that we didn't experience a certain element of fear. It's probably different for each person, too.
Yeah.
And I realize in retrospect it was probably pretty useless because now we look at the Cold War as, you know, like wow, what was I scared of all that time?
Yeah, it was a kitschy, strange.
Like, how many thumbs down there?
Three.
Three? So maybe. Three and three?
Yeah.
Just kind of neutral.
A bad taste in my mouth. Yeah.
That bad taste is new Coke.
So that's the thumbs.
And that pretty much wraps us up then. Is there anything else you wanted to...
I posted a question on the Discuss about Star Trek. Basically the question that I asked was, why does the Enterprise have so many people on it? Like in the thousands. There's thousands of people on this ship. And, what are those people for other than to have as a plot device where they're in danger.
The red shirt cannon fodder?
Yeah.
I think that's probably.
And why is the ship so big? It's a really huge ship.
I'm sure someone's going to mention red shirt cannon fodder because that's the most obvious reason, I think. I mean, those guys got to come from somewhere.
So,
Do you think that was like, that was punishment, you know, for like fucking up?
Like you had to wear a red shirt?
You had to wear a red shirt and go onto the planet, you know, knowing that you're going to get vaporized or like sucked into a wormhole or ripped apart by angry mutants or something, you know.
So, okay, Subterfuge says on the original series, or as he says, TOS, which is, he must be a Trekkie if he's using that acronym. You always see people busy doing space science stuff. There were always several people in engineering walking on and off the bridge or something for Kirk to sign, and lots of people scurrying through the walkways with tricorders and shit, which kind of really only reiterates my question, like, what the hell are they doing? Just walking around and scurrying, as he says. In the Next Generation, the ship was much larger because they still had all those people doing those things, plus they got to bring their families along for the ride. Which I never understood either. It seems really dangerous to put your...
And it was.
I know. So...
Because, I mean, it seemed like they would be tired of it. Because, like, every week, like, man, every week we get, like, attacked or, you know, someone dies or, you know.
Dreyfus Lugato says the idea in The Next Generation was to have the crew bring along their families because the ship was supposed to be doing extremely long-range, very remote exploration, which never really seemed... Oh, yeah. Actually, he says that. They ended up mostly sticking close to home, though, for various reasons. So, through the series.
That's a plot device.
Well, I mean, they didn't need to use that plot device on Firefly. I mean, that's one of the things that I always liked about Firefly.
That's because Firefly is a better show. You get my
drift
here?
Yeah. Firefly makes sense.
I have yet to understand why Star Trek is so highly revered. I've yet to even comprehend how it's remotely. But then that's true of most sci-fi shows.
Yeah.
They don't have to be good. They just have to exist. And I mean,
it's a rich universe that people can get involved with on a minute level that I think people enjoy doing that. So
I guess. I don't know. Do some shout-outs, the usual people. And thanks to you for listening.
If you made it this far.
Yeah, if you made it this far, then you're one of the... You're truly the elite. But big shout-out to Nick. Let's see.
I'm gonna give a shout out to my friend Jessica because she did listen to most of it.
Thanks to Stephanie for the Pez.
There you go. Thanks for the Pez. Pez is Charlene in Australia. Hopefully she'll listen to this one when she gets back on holiday.
Yeah, you know,
we
were dissing Australia. We weren't really dissing Australians like you said we would be.
Shiro Akaishi. He lives in New Hampshire or Maine or something like that. But he's a online friend. He's part of I'll get into more depth next time because I'm gonna play one of his songs. OGT or Ogit, something like that. He was the first person to add us as a subscriber. So hopefully he'll be downloading this episode.
Excellent. Big shout out to Larry for providing the vocals for the song we played.
There you go. Yeah.
And that's pretty much it.
Yeah. Shout out to Department of Eagles. Hope you guys listen to the podcast.
Hi, kids. Please remember to send all emails to SirMildredPierce@gmail.com and EBAOFVN@gmail.com. Thanks.
There's that, and so we're going to leave you with some
scratching
sounds. Annoying sound of me manipulating vinyl with my hands to produce strange rhythmic noises, and I hope you like it.